On KPFT, David Criswell, Director Emeritus of the Institute for Space Systems Operations at the University of Houston Clear Lake, has been interviewed by George Ryder, physics professor at U of H. But this Thursday, with the sun shining, and on the next three Thursdays, August 26th, September 5th, and September 12th, from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m., KPFT will feature programs on this vital subject. Do you wonder, what is lunar solar power? Is it too expensive? Are the petrochemical companies too powerful to allow lunar solar power? What impact will it have on jobs in Houston and life around the world? Members of the Lunar Solar Power Group, including Criswell and Ryder, will share ways for you to join the effort to make lunar solar power a reality. The Lunar Solar Power discussion is coming to KPFT, Houston.
Good evening, ahlan wa sahlan, and welcome to Arab Voices on Houston's Pacifica Radio, listener-sponsored, commercial-free KPFT 90.1 FM, with live streaming, podcasting, and online archive of previous shows at both kpft.org and arabvoices.net. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. I'd like to begin by thanking each and everyone who called in last Wednesday during Arab Voices program to support KPFT during its summer membership drive. Your contributions made a big difference. So many thanks to Sherry, Hatim, Muhammad, Jason, Claudia, Robert, Bob, and William. Thanks again. Shukran jazilan. Today on Arab Voices, we will have two guests. First, we will speak with Dr. Khaled Issaias, chairman of Rebuilding Egypt Organization and a board member with the Egyptian American Society for Democracy and Human Rights. We will then be joined by Imad Mekki, Egyptian journalist currently working for the investigative reporting program at the University of California at Berkeley. He will join us during the second half of this hour from California. We will talk with them about Egypt, the democratic process, and how the latest developments in Egypt has affected it. We will speak about the prospects for a future free and democratic elections in Egypt. We'll talk about rebuilding Egypt, foreign aid, media coverage of the events by the Egyptian media and others, and how that coverage played a role in the recent events. We will also take your questions live. The phone number is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. But first, let's start with Arab Voices Community Calendar. The Arab American Cultural and Community Center has opened the registration for the Arabic School 2013 and 2014. The Arabic School will be held every Saturday from 10 a.m. to 1:30 p.m., and it begins on Saturday, September 14th through Saturday, May 17th. The program is open for children with any entry level. There will be beginners, intermediate, and advanced classes. Arabic for children and adults, plus extracurricular activities, including arts and crafts, dabka classes, field trips, and more. To learn more about this program or to register, contact the ACC at 832-351-3366. In solidarity with the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, Houston United is organizing a community town hall meeting, an action on the dream for a just immigration reform. The main topics on proposed immigration bills to be presented include the path to citizenship and who will be left out, E-Verify and how it will affect workers, family reunification, as well as border issues. This town hall meeting is open to everyone, and it will be held on Saturday, August 24th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Magnolia Multi-Service Center on 7037 Capital. That's near 71st Street and Harrisburg. 50 years ago, on August 28, 1968, hundreds of thousands of people marched for civil and economic rights under the theme Jobs and Freedom. It was one of the largest demonstrations for human rights in the United States history, the occasion on which Dr. King delivered his passionate I Have a Dream speech. To commemorate this historic moment, the Rothko Chapel in Houston will hold a community conversation on the current state of MLK's dream. Dreams of the Beloved Community. A community conversation on the occasion of the 50th anniversary of the Great March on Washington and the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have Dream speech. This event will be moderated by nationally recognized diversity trainer and author Tracy Brown. The evening begins by listening to Dr. King's historic address in full and is followed by a facilitated discussion that draws on Tracy Brown's extensive professional experience leading transformational conversations. This special event will be held on August 28th at 7 p.m. at the Rothko Chapel on 3900 Yopon Street. For more information, visit rothkochapel.org. There will be an economic justice conference scheduled in Houston on Saturday, September 7th from 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. at the University of Houston Hilton Hotel on 4800 Calhoun. Featured speaker will be Dean Baker, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research at Washington, D.C. And economic justice workshops during this conference will be focused on living sustainably, students' issues, women's rights, workers' rights, immigration, community organizing, inspiration for activists, environmental issues, healthcare, and racial equality. Again, this economic justice conference will be held on Saturday, September 7th, from 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. There is the free registration, by the way, for students. And this conference is sponsored by Houston Peace and Justice Center and the University of Houston Student Government Association. For more information about it or to register, visit hpjc.org. By the way, KPFT, this radio station, is the media sponsor for this conference. Al Hanouna Society for Popular Culture, a performance of music, dance, and storytelling by world-renowned traditional folkloric group and one of the most acclaimed Palestinian folkloric societies in the Arab world, is coming to Houston again. Specializing in dramatic choreography, music, and debka dance, Al Hanouna seeks to preserve Palestinian culture and identity through artistic expression. In March of this year, Al Hanouna Group was in Houston and it performed live at the Palestinian Festival organized by the Palestinian American Cultural Center, and the performance was outstanding. Well, here is your chance to see them again for the first time if you've missed them at the festival, and this event will be held on September 15th at 5 p.m. at the Cullen Performance Hall at the University of Houston. By the way, Al Hanouna Group is on a tour and will be performing at various cities throughout the U.S. brought by the Jerusalem Fund and co-sponsored in Houston by the Palestinian American Cultural Center. The Arab American Cultural and Community Center will hold its 20th anniversary celebration gala this year under the theme United We Shape Our Future, and that will be held on October 5th. And speaking of the ACC, the Arab American Cultural and Community Center is offering a new college scholarship program for Arab American students who seek or currently attending a college or university. The application deadline is Friday, September 6th. For more information, visit acchouston.org. And the events I just mentioned are just a few of many others scheduled in the greater Houston area. For a comprehensive list of upcoming events, visit our website, and that's arabvoices.net. We will take a break now, and when we come back, we will speak with two guests, Dr. Khaled Sais, chairman of Rebuilding Egypt Organization and a board member with the Egyptian American Society for Democracy and Human Rights. And also, we will be speaking with Imad Mekki, Egyptian journalist currently working for the investigative reporting program at the University of California at Berkeley. He will join us during the second half of this hour from California. We will talk with them about Egypt, the democratic process, and how the latest developments in Egypt has affected it, the prospects for a free and democratic elections in the future, rebuilding Egypt, foreign aid, media coverage of the events by the Egyptian media and others, and how that coverage played a role in the recent events. We will also take your questions live. The phone number is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. We'll be right back.
مصر أقوى من المحن من المواجع والفتن الحضن هي والوطن كلنا بنحب مصر
مصر عنوان الشهامة والعزيمة والكرامة ليها الريادة والزعامة كلنا بنحب مصر
مصر أرض الأهرامات معجزة بالمعجزات نلها فجر الأمنيات كلنا منحب مصر مصر ليه صافي وجميل شعب حر طيب أصيل العرب بيته دليل كلنا
من كل ملة وكل دين أقباط يا مصر ومسلمين على حبك متجمعين كلنا بنحب مصر
الهلال ويا الصليب مش حنسمح للغريب يحرقنا بنار التخريب كلنا بنحب مصر
مصر بيتنا وذكرياتنا حلمنا فرحة حياتنا مصر صوتنا وأمنياتنا كلنا بنحب مصر مصر لينا عايشة فينا مصر غالية كتير علينا في قلوبنا شايلين هوا عينينا كلنا بنحب مصر
مصر دي أم العرب وبحضنا
وتحضري حلم الشباب كلنا منحب
Welcome back to Arab Voices on Houston's Pacifica Radio, listener-sponsored commercial-free KPFT 90.1 FM, with live streaming, podcasting, and online archive of previous shows at both kpft.org and arabvoices.net. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Before we begin our conversation with our scheduled guests this evening to talk about Egypt, I just want to mention a comment about what happened today in Syria. Of course, Syria has not is not a forgotten, but we've been concentrating on what's happening in Egypt. But very soon, hopefully next week, we'll be talking about Syria with some experts on that part of the world. But today there was a horrific, horrendous crime that has been committed. The number now is near 1,500 civilians that were killed, massacred in a bloody chemical attack near Damascus in Syria. The opposition says that the Syrian regime, the Syrian military, was behind the attack. The Syrian government said that it wasn't it. It didn't commit that attack or use any chemical weapons. But the at the end of the day, the tragedy in Syria continues, massive killings. And this is not the first time chemical weapons were used in Syria to attack civilians. It's interesting that this happened as the United Nations team, chemical weapons inspection team, arrived in Syria to investigate who was behind the chemical attacks that took place before in Syria. But today was absolutely horrific, horrendous, unbelievable number of casualties. The images, the pictures are just it's sickening, absolutely sickening, whoever is behind such attacks. I mean, if this is not war crimes, if this is not criminal act by all means, then what is? Hundreds of civilians, many, many children, women, elderly, were killed today. Nearly 1,500 by a chemical attack in Syria. Absolutely horrific act. So we will be talking about this topic and Syria in general and what's happening there and where are we going very soon. I'm planning to do that hopefully next week on this program. So going back to our originally scheduled guests and the topic at hand, which is about Egypt, another volatile situation in the Middle East. Joining us in the studio live here in the studios of KPFT is Dr. Khalid Essayas. He is an Egyptian living in Houston and has family still in Egypt. He is world-renowned radiologist, associate professor of radiology at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, and a fellow at several international societies, author of numerous publications and two radiology textbooks. He is the recipient of many international awards. Dr. Khaled Issaes is chairman of Rebuilding Egypt organization and is a board member of the Egyptian American Society for Democracy and Human Rights. Dr. Issaes, welcome back to Arab Voices.
Oh, thank you very much.
Last time we spoke, and we've had you on the show before, it was 2.5 years ago. It was just a month after the historic events of January of 2011 that toppled the Mubarak regime, who's, by the way, for our listeners, if you haven't heard, will be getting out of jail within the next few hours or so. If we look back at the past 2.5 years in Egypt and the many, many historic developments from elections, free democratic elections, a new president elected, constitutions have changed, military coups, many people even dispute that term to use it for what happened. An elected president is ousted, the military is on control, curfews, the emergency, state of emergencies is declared. Many, many events. Many Egyptians had big, huge dreams going back to January 25th and what has happened, and had really bright look at the future after 30 years of dictatorship and atrocities by the Mubarak regime and so on. You, as an Egyptian, take us back to that, and what were your feelings again back after the January of 2011 events and where we are now?
So first, allow me to extend my sympathy to the victims who were killed today in Syria, and also the victims of many massacres in Egypt for the last 50 days. This is, as you say, this is horrible, and you know, it is really a tragedy that we're living currently. So back to January 25th revolution, we had a dream, like what Martin Luther King said. We had a dream of developing a very strong, developed country. We had a dream, and we hoped that Egypt will once again become a leader for human civilization. So we had started this organization, Rebuilding Egypt, that has originated following the revolution of January 25th, and is started by several Egyptian university professors and professionals living in the United States of America. These professional Egyptians decided to collaborate their efforts to establish this foundation that would help in the realization of the goals of a revolution. We have welcomed every Egyptian, and actually we were looking to have it very diverse organization. We had all kinds of Egyptian in this organization, and we were avoiding involvement in any politics, and the reason for that is to set any differences aside and work for one goal, which is rebuilding our country. And we were in the right, we were heading the right directions, and we took tangible steps to rebuild Egypt based on the actual needs of the Egyptian society in several fields. And we started by that was our mind: economy, health, education. And we have some strong proposals and projects. We have already started them. So we had a dream, and I would say that these days that dream has turned into a nightmare. And what's going on in Egypt right now is a nightmare, not only for me, but for every Egyptian we're living it right now. I would say that my opinion about it, it's a coup. And I would refer to Mr. McCain, a duck walking and talking like a duck is a duck. So this was a coup by all definitions, and I'm academician, so before defining it, I would refer to the literature, and I will look at all references, and this match all definitions for a coup. And I would say that, unfortunately, for the last year, all Egyptians have been suffering. And they have been suffering, and most people suffering were the poor people in Egypt. Because the deep state did set up Morsi to fail for the last year. And they have managed a big campaign, and this campaign were contributed by the old establishment, the old regime, corrupt businessmen, media, personal, police forces, and army, and it was obviously now led by army. And unfortunately, the tools for this were hired thugs. Those were one of the tools that were threatening people, and this was proven just after the revolution. And I would refer the audience to two articles in New York Times, one by David Kirkpatrick in July 10th, 2013, and the other one by Josh Voorhees in New York Times in July 11th, 2013 in New York Times. Both of them, both were describing how the deep state did set up Morsi to fail by, having this large campaign, very well organized ones, and this was indicated by the disappearance of gas lines, power, and power cuts after the coup, and also by the police, which have returned back to the streets after the coup. What's more disappointing is what happened also after the coup. We had historical massacres. And we thought, after the first one, that this would be the worst one in the Egyptian history. But unfortunately, a few days later, or a few weeks later, we have the massacre that took place in Rabaa Square. This was the worst one. Thousands of people were killed, and we have a record now of six massacres happening within, I would say, six weeks period, which is a record. As an Egyptian, I'm very disappointed because I didn't imagine that this would ever happen in Egypt, and I think a lot of Egyptians share with me the same thought. It's a nightmare for us to see in Egypt right now. People are not feeling safe. It's horrible in Egypt right now. People cannot walk in the streets. Anyone can be killed at any time. Unfortunately, the bodies, even the dead people, the dead bodies get burnt. People get tortured before death. So it's just inhuman. It's very inhuman. And all Egyptians, I would say, they don't sleep comfortably now, because we feel really it's this could never happen in Egypt.
Now, the Egyptian military declared a state of emergency for 30 days. As we know, they have imposed a curfew at night on Egyptian. So those measures that the Egyptian military has enacted, that's what's causing people to fear, and that's causing more and more agony against the Egyptians and making them feel unsafe?
Well, I would tell you that millions of people protest in the streets right now. And this is opposite to what the media is trying to show. The media, the lying Egyptian media, which are unfortunately very biased, are trying to show the streets as empty. Are trying to show that this curfew is successful, and people abide by this curfew. But people protest day and night in Egypt now. Millions of people go on the streets, and I would refer people to the unbiased ones, unbiased media channels to watch and to listen to, not the ones that get paid by the corrupt businessmen. I would say that this is one of the most unfortunate, because in every street you find family that has a wounded person or a victim. Personally, I personally have two very close friends who were killed. One of them is consultant ophthalmologist. One of them is consultant cardiologist. the most polite people, the best people ever get killed now. And those people were just giving treatment to the protesters in Rabaa Square, and they got shot by the military. I would also mention that I know that, and I wouldn't mention their names for confidentiality, that two relatives of one of the best family here, Egyptian family in Houston, were also killed. One of them has nothing to do with the protest. One of them was trying to save his brother, and he got shot as well. And this is how it is. Yesterday, one of the journalists also was shot by the military. So I'm telling you that it's just getting scary. It is getting very fearful. And if you're asking about democracy, I would tell you that, you know, I think we lost it with what happened right now. I hope that this coup would be reversed, so we'd be able to enjoy again a democratic process.
Now, those people were killed by the Egyptian military, or by whom? The ones that you mentioned?
Yes.
That are relatives of somebody who's in Houston?
Yes, these people were peaceful civilians, were killed by the military, unfortunately. I mean, there are snipers everywhere, and they can kill anyone. They kill people randomly. They kill women. They kill children. You know, so these people were giving treatment to the protesters in Rabaa Square, and they were very nice, peaceful people, the most polite ones I've ever known. I mean, I don't see any reason for killing them, and the doctors were specifically targeted in this massacre. I mean, a lot of them were killed in this massacre, unfortunately.
Now, you mentioned that it's a nightmare now for you as part of the organizations that you're involved in trying to rebuild Egypt, from the economy to health to education, and the projects that you're all working on. Are these like paused, or are you unable to accomplish the tasks that you have established since the military ousted President Morsi, or how is that affected?
Well, unfortunately, the whole democratic process was affected, which means that any political party or any NGO would be affected as well. I will tell you that, you know, if you have any name, and if they suspected that you're not working for them, you would be jailed. You know, anything that's suspected, that's given to a poor person, and this poor person is bearded, for example, would be suspected, you know, as giving money to terrorists. I mean, terrorism now is a broad term that they're trying to use to justify for their crimes, right? It's like this, we heard it a lot in the current history, war on terror. And they are trying to use it to justify for killing these peaceful people. What they kill is not terrorists. What they kill are peaceful civilians in the streets. And I mentioned some of the people I know personally to indicate that, because I know that personally. I know them personally. If you can't really call terrorists for anyone who is opposing you, this is what they're trying to do. For NGOs and political parties, it's not safe now to operate, unfortunately.
Including journalists, too. Several journalists were killed and imprisoned and so on.
Some of them are Western.
Yeah. Now, we want to talk about that more, and also because the Egyptian army or the Egyptian government says that some of the Morsi supporters who were at Rabaa al-Adawiyah and other areas, they had guns with them and they were firing, and several police officers and army personnel were killed by them. So we will talk about that more. And the media role, you mentioned the media, you talked about the media. We are joined also now live from California by Ahmad Mekki, who is an Egyptian journalist currently working for the investigative reporting program at the University of California at Berkeley. Ahmad, welcome to Arab Voices.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks. We appreciate your time. You are a journalist. You've done a lot of work. You've covered the Middle East, not just Egypt. You were a John Knight Journalism Fellow at Stanford University. You worked for the New York Times, Bloomberg News, and Inner Press Service. So I know you follow the media a lot, and you have been writing articles, and you've been writing a lot. What is your take and your feedback on how the Egyptian media, if we can start with this, has played a role in the recent events and what has led to the latest ouster of Morsi before and after that?
Right. You actually need not look beyond previous coups in Latin America and in other countries to realize that the media always plays the front soldier, the first soldiers to be dispatched to the battle. In the case of Venezuela, for example, in 2002, before the attempt to remove Chavez from office, he was exposed to heavy bombardment from the media. He was called named like a madman or the next Fidel Castro was trying to turn Venezuela into a communist state. And the same also happened prior to the civil war in the former Yugoslavia, before the Serbian forces launched their massive massacres against the Bosnian Muslims and against other former Yugoslavians, not just the Muslims, they for 2 years bombarded their own soldiers and the Serbian public with anti-Muslim propaganda just to prepare them for what came next. So it was much easier for the Serbian soldiers to attack their neighbors and carry out all those massive rapes and massive roundups. The same actually was a carbon copy of that happened in Egypt prior to the ouster of Morsi. And like what happened also in Rwanda, the genocide in Rwanda, where one section would dehumanize the other through radio messages and calling them snakes or animals. Most of the supporters of the Islamic government were called names like sheep or a lamb that dehumanized them. So it was much easier for parts of the Egyptian public and later on for the Egyptian military to carry on not just a simple coup, but a very violent and very bloody coup that is now targeting many people who are not just Islamists, but people who are around those Islamists. And there are hardly any professionalism that I've seen in the Egyptian media. And for example, there are no double-checking, there's no verification. Any rumor can be planted by the very powerful and very effective side war operation at the military, They do have a propaganda department. And this has been very successful at planting stories in the Egyptian media. So I think they played a major role in dehumanizing Morsi and his supporters and criticizing the Egyptian revolution of 2011 and later on trying to justify and give cover to the coup and the bloody aftermath.
But how do you see the reaction of the Egyptian people to this? Obviously, they got used to the government-sponsored propaganda in the media under the Mubarak regime, and it's usually the case in many of the Arab countries before some of them went through uprisings, revolutions, whatever they are called. So how are they accepting this now? It is very evident. It's very clear. I mean, I watch a lot of satellite TV channels, Egyptian media and so on. It is truly unbelievable the way they plant and they disseminate information when, in fact, you can watch them on other channels that is completely the opposite almost. So are people taking that for face value? Are they questioning it? Are they raising? Or is it simply because it was the ouster of Morsi, they don't want the Muslim Brotherhood, so it's okay, we'll accept no matter what happens?
I haven't been to Egypt interview people over how they react to the Egyptian media. And it's my understanding that after reviewing several leaked cables from the U.S. Embassy in Cairo, that the U.S. government puts the figure Egyptians who follow or get their information from TV at a whopping 97%. That's 97%. 97% of Egyptians get their information from TV. And naturally, even if you have the most skeptical mind, if you are very questioning, and if you're very discerning, if you expose yourself to hours upon hours of that kind of propaganda, eventually you will be affected by that. And me, as an Egyptian coming from Egypt, who've lived there before, simply there are no other sports. There are no other activities. It's people just watch TV. They either go home after work and just watch TV. And even the other sports they practice is watch more TV. So it's very easy to penetrate that kind of mindset. It's really very easy to manipulate that. And remember, Egypt has always had a very powerful central government. The whole perception management was born under Nasser, Gamal Abdel Nasser. Even though I was young at the time, I actually wasn't born, but I have learned about the famous Egyptian radio newsreader, Ahmed Said, who had lied to the Arab people, to the entire Arab population, through the radio of Arabs, that Egypt and the other Arab armies were on their way to destroy the Israeli army and invade Tel Aviv and downing hundreds of Israeli aircraft. That turned out to be not true, even though people did buy it at the start and believed it. So I'm not very surprised that people who are do not have a very skeptical, discerning mindset would buy most of the propaganda, and people are just tired. It's been 2.5 years of non-stop political turmoil. People are just tired. Their brains are tired. They're exhausted. That's my take on it. I was hoping that my fellow reporters, my fellow journalists from Egypt, would do a better job applying professional standards, or at least some of the higher professional standards, and know that their duty is to serve the public and not serve the regime, and offer them the facts on the ground, or try to get as many facts on the ground as possible, and not just to play the propaganda card. And if I might just digress a little bit more, we're reporters. We're always looking for better jobs, better pay. And if there are half those news outlets, TV news outlets, that are being funded by Saudi Arabia and by the United Arab Emirates and the very wealthy nations of the Gulf, willing to pay you hundreds of thousands of Egyptian pounds, which equals a lot of money here too, just to go out and be a talk show host and recycle rumors and propaganda. Most likely you will just put your principles and professionalism aside. They don't want you to be professional. They want you to recycle those propaganda. So there is financial pressure on the media in Egypt to toe the official line, to toe the line that comes from the Gulf.
Yes. I want to remind the listeners of the phone number to call and ask questions of our guests. That number is 713-526-5738. Our guests this evening are Dr. Khalid El-Sais, who is joining us here live in the studios in Houston. He is chairman of Rebuilding Egypt organization and a board member with the Egyptian American Society for Democracy and Human Rights. We're also joined via phone from California by Ahmed Mekki, Egyptian journalist currently working for the investigative reporting program at the University of California at Berkeley. I want to ask you a question to get your feedback to both of you and Dr. Khalid. I'll start with you on this one. The latest developments in Egypt with the military ouster of Morsi and declaring the state of emergency and the curfews and all the happenings over the past month or so, who's the real casualty here? Do you see it the Muslim Brotherhood, as some say? Do you see it really an all-out revolution on democracy, the new democracy that the Egyptians were hoping for? And do you see it as taking us back to the dictatorship regimes and the military being in control? And who is to say if there is a new election and free and democratic election and some party is elected or somebody is elected, that the military wouldn't intervene again and oust him if they don't like him?
Well, I would tell you that I lived in Egypt for 31 years. I know how elections is in the presence of a very strict military police system. It is terrible. I mean, there is no transparent elections. The election results are known in advance. I mean, the winner is known in advance, and the result would be always 99%. I will tell you that I'm here because I wasn't actually inclined to any political direction. People knew me that I was actually trying for the last 3 years. I worked very hard from day one, and you remember when we had this radio interview like 3 years or 2.5 years ago, and I worked very hard for the sake of developing Egypt, and I wasn't inclined. I was offered to join the Freedom Justice. I was offered to join the Dastur. I tried to stay away from all of this because I had one goal, which is rebuilding Egypt, and I would always say it's good. As long as there is a democratic process in place, things will be good. If it's not good now, it will be good in the future. Now, what we did for the last year is we didn't really expect how year one democracy will be. We didn't realize that there will be a lot of problems in day one and year one after establishment of democracy, after, you know, the election of the first elected president. We killed our baby. We killed the democracy. You don't ask me how the democratic process or how elections will be in the future, because if this regime stays and if the coup is not reversed, it's going to be terrible. It's going to be, there is not going to be elections. There will be elections. There will be election days, but the results will be known in advance. Every Egyptian know that. I mean, and there are several ways, and the thugs, several ways to fake these elections. And the thugs who are now in the streets used by the police forces, we used to see them in the elections day. These people get hired by hour, and they get paid by the police forces or what's called the Hizb al-Watani, a national party that was in control in the past. So there will not be a democratic process. There will not be a democratic elections. It can be, there can be a day of elections, but the election results will be known in advance.
Let me get Ahmad's feedback on that. Ahmad, do you see these recent events by the military as an assault on democracy, on what people are hoping for, or was it really just to oust, according to the military, a bad president and a bad government?
Actually, I don't think they, my take on it is that I don't think the military wanted to assault democracy per se. What they were set out to do is protect their own interests, and in this case, their own financial interests. Let me tell you a couple of concrete examples that I found as a reporter, as an investigative reporter. They were looking into a huge database of some of the military contracts that went from the U.S. To Egypt. There were at least two cases where army generals were receiving kickbacks from the U.S. military contractors who would win the contract in Egypt and say, go and build housing, hangars for aircraft. And there are cases when international companies like Daimler Benz of Germany would also be bribing army generals to win more contracts and more sales inside the different military, providing engines or spare parts and so forth. What happened under Morsi, not only him, but the entire atmosphere of Egypt, was that this is a time of checks and balances. We will start, this is a democracy, to look into those contracts, we'll review them, we'll try to weed out all the corrupt people. Guess what? Many of them are actually inside the military. And guess what? Many of them thrive on certain financial benefits that they get, but the rest of Egyptians do not get. Once Mohamed Morsi and his supporters came close to this circle, there was a certain that the military will react. And this is at least to how I view it, what really triggered the whole idea of trying to derail democracy in Egypt. Not because we hate democracy, not because we don't want Egypt to be a good country. It's because their own financial interests were now at stake. If you get the parliament to look into our business, and the parliament will obviously clear about it, and some of the political actors, then that's how we retaliate. And that's, I think, is an underreported story. I think if there was a professional journalism in Egypt on the Arab world, people should start looking into that kind of business. How much of financial interest triggered the coup, and whether the coup leaders were actually worried about the exposure of how they managed that kind of wealth away from public scrutiny.
And I want to mention to our listeners here that Ahmed Mekki has an exclusive report titled U.S. Bankrolled Anti-Morsi Activists, documents revealing U.S. money trail to Egyptian groups that pressed for president's removal. It is astonishing, Ahmed. I read that. And for our listeners, we're going to have a link to that on our website later this evening under Mentioned on Air. It is an exclusive report called U.S. Bankrolled Anti-Morsi Activists that was published last month by Ahmed Mekki. It has truly some astonishing facts and figures and numbers, and he alluded to that a little bit now, Ahmed. Let's take a call from one of our listeners. The person on hold now is Masoud. Masoud, you're on there.
Yeah, I'm here, and my question to your guest is that whatsoever shortcomings and the problems could have been with Morsi government, but they, of course, he was the elected president of Egypt from Pharaoh's from up till today. So I would like to know about the hypocrisy of the Western media, that how come that a democratic government was overthrown by the military with the conspiracy of media and judiciary and the so-called liberal people, and over here there is a complete criminal silence in the Western media. If the same thing could have happened, that the Egyptian general could have killed hundreds and thousands of liberal people and pro-West people, the reaction could have been totally different. This is my question, and I think that in the whole Islamic world, it is a lesson to us that if even democratic means we come to the power, it will not be accepted by the West until and unless we will not obey, and we should be faithful to their policies.
Okay, Ahmed, let's take your feedback on that, since it's he talked a lot about the media and the Western media.
Right. I've worked for the Western media. I worked for the New York Times and for Bloomberg and among others, and I worked in several other places. I think over the past 11 years since the 9/11, and actually, in fact, maybe a little bit before that, during the wave of violence in the Middle East, there were exchange of violence between the ruling governments and regimes in the Middle East and some of the Islamist oriented violent groups, the Western media had built this perception that the Islamists are not democratic, and that the Islamists in general are not fit to be part of the, and I'm quoting right now, these are not my words, the civilized world, and that had went on for many years. It's very hard to fight that stereotype. It's in place already, and it's very hard to fight it. Even among reporters, we should know better. I can tell you stories upon stories when I worked with the Western colleagues who would react to the slightest reference to religion as an indication of political tendencies and religious tendencies. I remember when I was starting my career way back, and when I started my job, I was telling my boss that I will meet you Saturday, inshallah, and I dropped the word inshallah, and I was still in Cairo. And he just freaked out simply because I just said the word inshallah, and asked me if I were religious, and it was a whole scene, actually, because of that word. And that what told me early on is that these guys come with their own stereotypes. And that's what actually happened with the Morsi government. The Morsi government was not dictatorial in any way, but the slightest hint that he may be moving in that direction. Like what happened with Bassem Youssef, an Egyptian comedian. The guy was not even arrested. He was just called in for questioning. And he had the ability to go voluntarily. Yet the Western media made a big scene out of it and portrayed the Morsi government as a dictatorial. So there's we are dealing with massive stereotypes that will take many years before it can go away. And without a push back from Muslims and Arabs in general, worth to try and mitigate those images. I'm afraid we'll have to deal with many other coups that would be justified in the Middle East as fighting terrorism or as fighting radicalism.
Yes, and Khaled, you wanted to say something quickly. We only have about a minute or less left, if you could.
Okay, I'll just tell you that today I had an older friend in my work, and he was telling me that Morsi was terrible, and he has read this, and he came to me with this article that Morsi has dissolved the parliament, and it's actually, and it was a lot of lies like this, and I told him, you know, you know, he's not the one, it's the deep state that dissolved the parliament, it's like the Supreme Court. And there is one quote I would like to mention here for Martin Luther King: the hottest place in hell is reserved for those who remain neutral in times of great moral conflicts. And I'm saying this to our president, President Obama, that he's remaining very neutral, and his administration, he's not declaring it till this moment as a coup, although it's obvious it's a dark, it's a coup, and he's just condemning violence. We don't know what this means. We need him to declare it as a violence, because again, the hottest place in hell is reserved for those who remain neutral in times of great moral conflicts.
And at the end of the day, it's not really about Morsi or the Muslim Brotherhood or the Egyptian army. It's about democracy, human rights, and the democratic process to be well established and well followed and honored. I want to thank both of our guests because we are out of time. Imad Makki joining us from California, an Egyptian journalist working with the investigative reporting program at the University of California at Berkeley, and Dr. Khaled Issaias, chairman of Rebuilding Egypt and a board member with the Egyptian American Society for Democracy and Human Rights. Thank you both so much
thank
for
you.
Your time. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening, and many thanks to Sherry for her assistance. Technology Bites is coming up next. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next Wednesday, peace on earth.
KPFT is supported in part by the West University Baha'i Community. A moment for reflection. Strive that your actions, day by day, may be beautiful prayers. Turn towards God and seek always to do that which is right and noble. For more information or to find your local community, visit www.bahai.us, BAHAI.US, or call 1-800-22-UNITE. You're tuned in to 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Many times, lunar solar power has been addressed before the sun comes up on Thresholds Thursday mornings from 6 to 7 a.m. on KPFT. David Criswell, Director Emeritus of the Institute for Space Systems Operations at the University of Houston Clear Lake, has been interviewed by George Ryder, physics professor at U of H. But this Thursday, with the sun shining, and on the next three Thursdays, August 26th, September 5th, and September 12th, from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m., KPFT will feature programs on this vital subject. Do you wonder, what is lunar solar power? Is it too expensive? Are the petrochemical companies too powerful to allow lunar solar power? What impact will it have on jobs in Houston and life around the world? Members of the Lunar Solar Power Group, including Criswell and Ryder, will share ways for you to join the effort to make lunar solar power a reality. The Lunar Solar Power discussion is coming to KPFT, Houston.
You are listening.